Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, well, I think our intro music didn't work so well, so welcome, everybody. What the?
All right, well, this is Andy, and with the assembly call, I'll kind of try to get us started here. I think Jared's having some technical issues, but we join you after another victorious IU basketball game. The Hoosiers win 81-54 over Oakland tonight in a game that really was a 20-point game at halftime and really hovered right at or around that mark for the bulk of the second half. So, but some interesting performances to note, despite the fact that it wasn't necessarily a close game. I think a lot of things to touch on, and we'll also spend some time toward the end of the show looking ahead to the Notre Dame game in Indianapolis on Saturday, which is shaping up to be actually a pretty big game for both teams. So we'll talk a little bit about that one, what it means to each team, and maybe a couple things to look for as we get going. So while we wait for Jared to call back in, I'll go ahead and swing it to Ryan for his rant about tonight's game.
Yeah, I think tonight, obviously, the story was Evan Gordon, but I think the bigger sort of point of all of that is how much all of the young guys, or not necessarily young guys, but new guys are contributing. You saw guys like Troy Williams had 11 points at the half and 13 overall. Noah Vonleh, of course, continued to be outstanding. He only had 8 points, but he had 10 rebounds. And then you saw guys like Luke Fisher, Stan Robinson, and Evan Gordon all make serious contributions during the game, which were really encouraging because it really has taken a while for guys like Gordon and Robinson and Fisher and even in some cases Williams to look steady out there and consistent. And I thought that it's really encouraging to see over the last few games those guys really starting to find a role and find their place with the team. And Gordon is just the most obvious example is 26 points tonight, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, and a block. He's really rounding into that great sixth man role, and is a great. He can play. You know, it's great that we have a backup point guard for Yogi, but I mean, he's playing like a starter, and I think he hit his first 10 shots from the field. Also, finished 10 of 12. 4 or 5 from 3, which is huge because we need another guy to be able to step up and hit 3-pointers other than Yogi. So really encouraging to see that, seeing all the young guys play well, and not necessarily young guys, like I said, but the new guys play well and really find their spot. So that's my rant for the night. I mean, there's nothing to complain about. I thought they all played very well, and it was nice to see that. And again, sort of seeing them build off of that loss at Syracuse and come out and play with confidence and play as a unit instead of trying to do so much one-on-one stuff.
Yeah, I mean, for me, is we kind of look at, the bottom line for tonight. I thought, Gordon was certainly the guy I would have singled out as well. I thought he was outstanding. But I'll talk a little bit about Will Sheehy. Always a good topic of conversation for the show. And tonight, in a game where he didn't make a field goal, and wound up with just 3 points, I thought he impacted the game almost as much as anybody. He had 8 rebounds, and for some of these games when, he's ended the game without a rebound, I think that's important. It shows he's really, into the flow. But more than that, it was really his defense on Travis Bader for Oakland. And for those who don't follow Oakland basketball very closely, which is probably most everyone, Bader comes in with a legit shot to set the all-time NCAA record for made 3-pointers. And there's a guy who's had some big games against, the better competition that Oakland plays. They typically, in the non-conference, will play a fairly rough schedule. And he's put up numbers against some good teams. So it isn't just, a guy, playing in a lesser-known league putting up numbers. He's done it against some good teams as well. I think over the first four games of this year, played all either ranked or at least tournament caliber teams and averaged about 20 points. But Sheehy really led the defensive effort on him, limited to 0 of 10 from three-point range and broke a streak of, I think, 62 straight games, I want to say, that Bader had made a three-pointer. And I thought he was really locked in on him defensively. And I think, again, I'll look to judge Sheehy a little bit more in a bigger game when they might need him to score more. But I think he's certainly shown, this year that in some of these blowout games he's been content to let other guys score. And I thought tonight, kind of deferred offensively so he could really expend more effort on the defensive end. And I thought he did just an outstanding job on Bader, as did a number of the other guys. There were, I think, most everybody on the floor took a shot with him at one point. Even Jeff Howard stepped out on him once or twice on there. And I think as the game went along, it really became clear that it was a pretty big goal for the team to really limit him and kind of gave something to watch down the stretch in a game that otherwise didn't have too much going for it. So I think Jared's still trying to get back in, but I know we wouldn't want Ryan to miss a chance to talk about Sheehy, so I figured I'd give you a shot to give your take on his play tonight.
Well, what I thought was great about Will tonight was he only had 3 points. His offense obviously wasn't coming. He was 0-5 from the field. He was only 3-6 from the free throw line. But he had 8 rebounds, 2 assists. He was cutting well offensively, and he may not have been leading to finishes or even necessarily getting the ball off those cuts, but it was making the defense react to him and look out for him and account for him, and that opened up stuff for everybody else. And like you said, his defense was outstanding. And the thing about Sheehy is we all know he can impact the game without scoring. And so seeing him do that and sort of get back to the root of what makes him a good player was really encouraging, because the offense will come, and even if he doesn't score 10 points a game, he can impact every single game IU plays with the little things, the rebounding and defense and hustle plays and things like that. So it's far more important for IU for him to be doing those little things than necessarily scoring. So, again, really good to see that, and nothing but compliments for me for Sheehy tonight, which is shocking, I know.
Okay, I think I'm back. You guys can hear me, right?
Yes, we can.
Yep.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's one of the problems with live shows like this, is if you have a little technical problem, you don't really have a whole lot of time to make up for it, but no problems. Okay, so I'm assuming that we've...
We're on the air?
What?
I didn't even know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we do these live, Ryan. okay, so I just heard you guys talking about Will Sheehy. I'm going to assume that we've talked about Evan Gordon and his explosion. Have we discussed that yet?
We have.
Okay, so here's a question that I have. Let me, since I've already been the turd in the punch bowl tonight, kind of screwing things up at the beginning, let me continue to play that role. So I was looking at some stats during the game, and I was looking at Noah Vonleh's field goal attempts, and he's currently third. Heading into tonight's game, he was third on the team in field goal attempts, behind Yogi Ferrell, behind Will Sheehy. And, I was kind of lamenting to myself watching the team tonight at, how rare it was that we got the ball down into him. Now, early in the game, we did, and I thought he did a good job, and, he always looks so effective and so poised in the post. But I'm getting a little bit concerned that the frustration level that we had for the past couple of years with the team's inability to get the ball into Cody Zeller in the half court is going to continue into this year with our inability to get it into Noah Vonleh, which is a real shame because he is as good a young post player as we've seen. I mean, he may be better at this stage with his back to the basket, ball in his hands, than even Cody was. And I want to get your guys' thoughts on that. Because as we head into the Big Ten season, this team starts facing more games in the half court that are slower and we're not able to get out in transition, we're going to have to be able to get the ball inside in the half court and take advantage of his skills. And it's something that Tom Crean teams have struggled with. It's a frustration we've all had. Andy, I'll go to you first with this. Do you foresee that being a continued frustration this year with Noah?
I don't know. It's still hard for me to judge a lot of things in a game like this that really wasn't close. I mean, I do think they tried to go to him a little bit in the first half. I think in general, the second half, if I'm remembering the stats from halftime right, I think IU only shot 2 free throws in the second half. I think they're just, I don't know, in a 20-point game, maybe they don't make that concerted effort. And I think not having Yogi on the floor for a decent amount in the first half probably impacted that a little bit as well. I don't know that it's a huge concern for me at this point. I think it's something to watch, but I don't know that in a game where it really wasn't that close, you didn't have those situations where you really needed to try to go inside and get a basket or things like that. You know, I don't know that I take too much away from it, particularly because, you know, when the game really started to blow open in the first half, a lot of that was transition, even running off of, you know, running off of misses more than even turnovers. And so I'm not worried yet, but I do think it's easy to look at some of those troubles in the past couple of seasons, and it's a reasonable fear at the same time to do that as well. And I think there's, you know, some because I think he does have a good, you know, array of moves, and for him it might be more of, you know, kind of the upfront work to establish position could be, you know, something that's holding him back a little bit just from getting position. And finally, I think team, you know, we saw Oakland try to do this a little bit tonight, you know, play zone, and everything we've seen thus far is certainly just that we're going to see more of that going forward.
Okay, and Ryan, let's get your thoughts on that too.
Well, I think that Vonleh is a little bit unselfish. I think he was getting touches tonight. They were a little further from the basket, and so he was more inclined to pass out of it. And if you look at his numbers in the last few games, Evansville, he had 6 field goal attempts, Syracuse 5, North Florida 5, but he also had free throw attempts in those games. Like against Syracuse, he had 16 free throw attempts. So those he may be, you know, going to shoot more, but he's getting fouled and going to the line. Against Syracuse, he had 16 attempts, as I said. North Florida, he had 9 free throw attempts. So, again, you can't really judge it just by field goal attempts. I think that he's getting fouled a lot, going to the line a lot, and that has to do with maybe a downward trend in his field goal attempts. So I think that I don't think we're going to see a Cody Zeller situation, because part of the problem with Cody, and I talked about this for 2 years, is that he got really bad post position a lot and just wasn't open up to passing angles, and I have not seen that as a problem with Vonleh. So I think that we'll be fine long term as far as that goes. And also you have to remember that a lot of these guys like to drive, and when you have an open driving lane, first of all, opponents are going to pay attention to Vonleh in the post, and that's going to open up driving lanes for a lot of these guys who like to drive and get into the paint and have their offense develop from there. So I think it's a combination of a few things, but I don't think it's something to be concerned about just given the amount of times he's hitting the free throw line and the post position he gets. So I think it's a combination of those two things will make it so it's fine moving forward.
And as this show continues to go about as well as Indiana's second half against Syracuse, we know Andy was having some audio difficulties there last time, kind of a crackly line, so he's called back in, so hopefully those audio difficulties will be better. I want to talk a little bit about Troy Williams. I don't know how much you guys got into him for those few minutes there when I was gone. I thought Troy was just great at the beginning of the game. I thought he came out with a real purpose. He was active. He was confident going to the bucket. I mean, he scored, you know, 7-9 points early there, made a 3, looked really good, and then kind of disappeared a little bit. And we've noticed that a little bit from him, you know, just, you know, that spurt ability. I mean, he can put together, you know, 5-7 point runs really quickly, is very active, and then you won't even notice him for, you know, for 15-20 minutes. Some of that is the fact that he goes out with the crazy substitution patterns, and part of it is just, you know, him, you know, still kind of struggling for that consistency. And that's going to come with a freshman. Andy, as you come back on here, what did you think of Troy's overall contribution tonight?
I mean, I thought, like you did, that he was really good at the beginning. And one thing I noticed as well early on, you know, besides just, you know, making a couple shots, which always helps everybody, but, you know, I saw him even kind of directing traffic a little bit on the offensive end where, you know, telling guys where to be and where the ball needed to be and things like that. And I noticed him doing that in another game. I think it was the UConn game, where he seemed to be a guy that was willing to, you know, pull everybody together and, you know, and a guy who was vocal as a freshman in terms of being confident enough to know where people should be and all those kinds of things. I think that's something that's pretty rare to feel, you know, comfortable in calling some of those things out. So that was definitely a positive. I think, you know, just – He's also a guy, because he's so talented athletically and such a good finisher, I think he gets himself into positions where he's just, you know, trying to be able to finish and can be out of control at times. And I think, you know, saw a little bit of that there toward the end of the game. as things got a little ragged. But in general, I thought he played a really good game, and he's a guy I continue to, you know, kind of bang the drum that, you just want to see more of him, and the more you see him do, the more you want to see him play and work through some of those things. I think that's something that, you know, he's just going to pick up more minutes as the season goes along, and probably had the chance to play a little bit extra tonight with Devin Davis out, still with an injury. But I thought overall a good performance for him, and a guy who, if nothing else, I think you know is going to be active and involved when he's out there. And while sometimes those things can get in trouble, there's a lot more good than bad that just comes out of playing the way he does.
You know, Andy, you mentioned Devin Davis was out, and he was actually, he took part with the team in some warm-ups, or at least he was out there in his warm-up. So hopefully his injury isn't too bad and he can get back on the floor. But playing the role of Devin Davis tonight was Jeremy Hollowell. You know, you look at Jeremy's numbers, 3-for-10 from the field. He only had 6 points. You know, he had several of those kind of awkward Jeremy Hollowell moments where he'll make a good quick move but then isn't decisive with it after that, and it leads to a wild shot or you know, or a turnover, something like that. So, you know, there's still a lot to be done there. But I'll tell you what I really loved about his performance tonight was his activity and just his effort and his energy. I mean, you know, you see it right in the box score, 10 rebounds and 4 assists plus a steal. You know, when was the last time that you saw numbers like that from Jeremy Hollowell? I don't know for sure, but I would guess those 10 rebounds are a career high for him, or at least close to it. And it was really nice to see him. You know, he wasn't having a great offensive night, but he found other ways to contribute. And if he can do that, then he becomes such a valuable player for this team, because he's athletic, he's tall, and when he's active and engaged like he is tonight, he can be very valuable. Ryan, I know you had some thoughts on Hollowell's game, so talk about him a little bit.
Yeah, I thought especially early it was really exciting to see him mixing it up in the post area, not necessarily, you know, posting up and going one-on-one that way, but seeing him take his offense down there and make himself available for passes and things like that, closer to the basket, and utilizing his size. I also thought he was very aggressive, rebounding the ball, you know, with the ball in his hand, making smart decisions and things like that. I think in the second half, when you're up 20, guys take some bad shots. That happens, and it's not a, you know, it's not something that can be helped. It just happens. Everybody wants to get theirs in a blowout and have fun in that way. So I think that some of those shots in the second half were a little, you know, out there and probably on, you know, when watching film, it'll get a little grief for taking them. But again, I thought he played an excellent game. This is 2 games in a row where he really looked involved, looked like he was playing with a purpose and wasn't just sort of gliding through the game. So that was really encouraging to see.
And the last individual that I want to talk about, I guess two individuals here before we move ahead and start looking at Notre Dame, Luke Fisher and Stan Robinson, two guys off the bench who, you know, again, Stan Robinson continued to be active. He had 8 points. He had 3 boards, 2 assists, you know, was a little out of control at times, but he was very assertive. And Luke Fisher, you know, put together one of his best games on the young season with 6 points and 6 boards. He was 3-for-4 from the field. Andy, talk a little bit about Luke. You know, and as we see him now, you know, start to get back in the flow. You know, we had the injury. This is, I think, only maybe the second game without that arm brace. You know, we see him start to get in the flow. This is a guy that, you know, was very highly touted coming out of high school, really shot up the recruiting rankings as a senior, and a guy a lot of people were expecting a lot out of. We haven't quite seen it yet. But how important can he be for this team moving forward, especially into the Big Ten season, if he becomes a rotation player who gives significant minutes off the bench?
Yeah, I think it's funny that, you know, we bring up him after Hollowell, because, you know, one of the things I thought Hollowell did well tonight is he just did the little things. He was, you know, very active and you know, made hustle plays and things like that, which, you know, which to me is something he wasn't doing before. He was just trying to do too much. I know that's cliche to say, but he really was. He wasn't taking advantage of his normal, you know, abilities and getting caught up in, you know, trying to shoot threes and trying to do other things. I thought Ryan's point about, you know, just trying to get close to the basket, be around the ball, get a few easy baskets was big for him. And I think you really can say the same thing of Fisher. I thought, you know, he came in, got a few rebounds. He got 6 rebounds in, I don't have the minutes played in front of me yet, but, I mean, he got 6 rebounds, 4 on the offensive end in a relatively short period of time, and I thought did the same things as Hollowell. You know, IU doesn't need him, you know, to come in and, you know, knock down a 15-foot jump shot. I'm not going to complain if he does, but he doesn't have to come out off the bench and feel like he needs to do that. You know, what he needs to do for this team is play defense and rebound and, you know, make it hard for opponents to score around the basket. And I thought he did that. He did that well tonight. And I think, you know, you kind of look at some of the conversations that we've had over the last few games around, you know, rotations and how things shake out for this team. At least for tonight, he looked more ready to contribute than Hunter Perea did, who, you know, made a silly foul, you know, just didn't really, you know, had an issue with, you know, catching a pass. Some of the same little things we did before. And so while his athletic ability is off the charts when you compare it to Fisher, it looked like, at least for tonight, and again, it'll be something to watch going forward, that Fisher seems to be the guy that's more ready to contribute in a game situation, even if that's by coming out and, you know, doing some of the little things and making those plays. If he comes out and plays like tonight and scores, you know, 6 points most games and grabs six rebounds, even if he, you know, there's 6 points and four rebounds, I'd love to see that out of Fisher over the course of the season. I think would be a really good building block for him going into his sophomore year. So, you know, one game sample and think what you will, but, you know, continuing to shake the rust off and be able to play a little bit more like himself. I thought he looked good tonight and did some good things in, you know, short stints.
You know, while you were talking, Andy, we got a question in on Twitter about when does Fisher start to pass Hunter Mosquera Perea on the depth chart? I mean, do you think that process is kind of already starting?
I mean, if you base it on tonight, I would be inclined to say yes, just based on the way that he played. I just thought he certainly brought more, which, you know, just seemed more into the game and, you know, better hands and doing some of the little things that Perea seemed to have trouble with.
You know, the clear storyline tonight, obviously Evan Gordon's explosion off the bench and Will Sheehy's terrific defense despite not making a field goal. You know, those I think are two of the biggest stories. But, you know, let's not bury this one, which is Indiana's just terrific rebounding. It just continues. The Hoosier defensive end, that's good for an 86.7% defensive rebounding percentage, which is just an amazing number. And it just, you know, it continues what we've seen from this Indiana team. You know, can this team shoot as well as last year's team? No. But this is one of the better rebounding teams that we've seen in Bloomington in a long time. You know, and it really helps, you know, to get those second chance points, to make sure that you're securing the defensive glass and able to get out in transition. And Ryan, I know it was one of your big takeaways from tonight's game.
Yeah, I mean, this may, you know, with the youth of the team that everyone's talking about, Yogi, and there's always something to talk about Vonley, it may have slipped under the radar that coming into the night, Indiana was third in the nation to rebounds per game at 47.8. I mean, that's a ton of rebounds per game. And, yeah, tonight I just think it, you know, we've talked about it before, but Noah Vonley is a relentless rebounder. He just does not give up on the ball, and he's also just got an innate sense of where the ball is going to be coming off, you know, a shooter's hand. And, you know, I thought Hollowell stepped up and rebounded well tonight. I think we all know Troy Williams can be an excellent rebounder. Will Sheehy is a good rebounder. Guys like Fisher obviously has a great idea of what he's doing. Stan Robinson has impressed me as a rebounder at times. So just that's something that's really going to help when it comes to the Big Ten, not letting teams get second shot opportunities, and, of course, the offensive rebounding, which has been good all year for Indiana. So, yeah, it's just a huge storyline that's laying below the surface, I think, with this team, because shooting is such a concern and the youth of the team is such a concern. But, dang, they really can rebound. I mean, it's impressive. And it's been really fun to watch over the last couple of games, and it's been more noticeable.
Okay, well, again, the Hoosiers win 81-54. You're listening to the Assembly Call. I'm Jared Morris here with Ryan Phillips and Andy Bottoms. Let's look ahead now. Let's look ahead to Notre Dame. The game is on Saturday. I've been referring to it all night on Twitter as a must-win for Indiana, and I don't think many people would dispute that. You know, Indiana had two opportunities go by the wayside to get signature victories against UConn and Syracuse, two teams that are in the top 15 right now, if they're not in the top 10. And this game against Notre Dame is Indiana's last chance. It's not a win on par with what wins over those other two schools would have been, but it's a win over a tournament-caliber team, and it's one Indiana needs based on its non-conference schedule. And so as we transition into that game, Andy, I want to go to you first. I want to do so by talking about Yogi Ferrell. You know, Notre Dame has one of the better backcourts in America, at least in terms of just experience and guys that have done some things and are a solid backcourt. You know, you look at Yogi, and, you know, tonight wasn't a great game for him, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. You know, he had 11 points, 3 boards, 2 assists, a steal. You know, you look at the stats, I was kind of surprised. I mean, we know Yogi has taken on the role of scorer. I knew he had taken the most shots, but I didn't realize coming into tonight, he had taken 116 field goal attempts. Next was Will Sheehy with 74, followed by Noah Vonleh with 67. You know, so Yogi is by far taking the most shots, and I know, Andy, you know, last year that was a sign things weren't going well for the Hoosiers. This is a totally different team, so we can't base it on that, you know, that same criteria. But as you look at Indiana going forward in some of these bigger games, you know, does Yogi need to back off a little bit, you know, with hunting shots like we've seen him do? And now that guys like Evan Gordon have stepped up and Troy Williams is getting more comfortable and Noah Vonleh has proven himself and even guys like Austin Etherington are starting to step up and at least shoot it more confidently and Stan Robinson is in the flow. There's a lot more options. Do you want to see Yogi go into more of a role of a facilitator and back off the scoring just a bit? Or do you think that for this team to be successful against good teams like Notre Dame, that he still needs to pace the team in shots as he has been so far this year?
You know, I think, as I've kind of talked about even, you know, leading into this game, I'd like to see him shoot a little bit less. But I do think, you know, there's not going to be many nights when he isn't and shouldn't be – you know, one of the guys that takes, you know, probably going to be first, second, probably at worst third in the team in shot attempts in any given game. And I think that's fine. I think, you know, the bigger issue for me is when there gets to be a pretty big drop-off between him and, you know, some of the other guys. And, you know, tonight he took 10 shots in fairly limited action, which was, you know, tied for second behind Evan Gordon, who was, you know, the way he was shooting, I think he probably could have shot 20 times and I wouldn't have minded, but I do think that hopefully it becomes a situation where both other guys on the team are starting to develop some confidence in their ability to score, and he's starting to develop some confidence in them. I think part of that was, you know, for as many unknowns as we as, you know, fans and analysts and whatever we want to, you know, call ourselves, were somewhat unfamiliar and unsure of what we could expect from guys. Even though he's been playing with them over the summer and things like that, he probably wasn't all that much more sure what to expect from them in game situations. You need help at this point where they've got enough games under their belt. You're starting to see some of these guys, you know, settle into a six-man role like a Gordon and develop some confidence that hopefully, you know, that confidence, you know, comes from him as well and is a little more apt to try to set up other people and get them going. But I think the reality of this team is that, you know, he's going to be one of the top guys in terms of field goal attempts, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it becomes a bad thing when he takes 16 and the next guy has 8 versus he takes a dozen and somebody else has 10.
All right, and let's start looking at Notre Dame specifically. You know, for Hoosier fans who aren't familiar with the Irish, what can we expect, and what kind of game do you expect to see on Saturday?
It's interesting. I've watched Notre Dame a couple times over the course of the season so far, and they really seem to be I was surprised when I looked at their Pomeroy numbers defensively. They rank 126, which isn't great by any means. I would have actually expected it to be less. They gave up a ton of points when they played Iowa, which is one of their losses. They also lost to Indiana State at home earlier in the season, and just don't seem to be are giving up a lot of points for a team that plays at a relatively slow pace. So I think that's something to watch for as you know, compare and contrast, you know, what the different teams do well. I think their defense is probably a pretty big question mark and hopefully something that IU can exploit. You know, one number on that side of the floor that really jumps out, a couple actually, is they are one of the better teams in the country at you know, kind of the lowest defensive free throw rate, which means you know, the free throw rate is your free throw attempts divided by your field goal attempts, and they're, you know, ranked 8th in the country at really keeping teams off the line. So I don't know if based on some of what I saw against Iowa was that was because they just weren't guarding anyone or weren't close enough to anyone to actually be in a position to foul. But they're also a team that isn't super deep and has some guys they really can't afford to be without. So I think some of the aggressiveness that IU showed early tonight will be important there because if they really are going to back off and try not to foul, that will obviously bode well for IU. And the other thing there is they've done a pretty good job at limiting offensive rebounds, which is an area where IU has really excelled, you know, third-ranked in offensive rebound percentage coming into tonight. I don't imagine that'll drop off too much after what we saw this evening. So on that side of the ball, I think that's, you know, some things to watch. I think IU should be able to score with them. On the other side, Notre Dame, really efficient offensively. A lot of that goes back to having, you know, the veteran players that they do and a really strong backcourt. When you look at, you know, Eric Atkins and Jerrion Grant and Pat Connaughton, and even the younger guy like Demetrius Jackson coming in as a freshman, those guys are really steady. They don't turn the ball over a ton. And they've assisted on this is the other thing that stood out. They've assisted on nearly two-thirds of their made baskets, which, you know, you think about a game like IU tonight, you know, IU's got 14 assists on 30 buckets, and that felt like something huge to IU. 66.2% of their field goals they've had assists on. So, you know, both Jackson and – or both Grant and Atkins have, I think, you know, around four and a half – at least four and a half assists a game. So, you know, a team that really moves the ball well, plays at a pretty slow pace, and, you know, trying to just kind of get by on some things inside from Derek Sherman, who was a former Michigan State guy, been in college for what feels like about 8 years. I think he fits the role this year for Notre Dame of white guy who seems like he's been in college for 11 years, a title previously held by, you know, Scott Martin, who actually was in college for that long, Heron Goedy, and Jack Cooley last year. So following in that long-standing tradition at Notre Dame, he's kind of playing that role this year, but does, you know, has had some really good games, you know, putting points on the board inside. And so, a guy, you know, Vonleh is going to have to try to guard without getting in foul trouble. So, I think it probably shapes up to be a pretty high scoring game. And certainly one as you kind of circle back to Yogi, that him getting in foul trouble in the way that he did tonight, has the potential to be problematic, not necessarily because Notre Dame turns people over at a high rate, but you know, just higher level competition. You want a guy who's got some confidence handling the ball a lot in a game that really could get, you know, one where a lot of points could be scored. So important for him to be able to play solid defense on Atkins, but finding a way to do so without fouling.
You know, Andy, you are a bracketology expert in addition to being an Indiana expert. And, you know, let's illustrate this game on Saturday. Let's say that the worst-case scenario happens, that Indiana loses this game to Notre Dame. How many conference wins do you think the Hoosiers would then need to make the tournament?
You know, to some extent it's tough to say because it would probably depend a little bit on who they would be.
Yeah.
I definitely feel like double digits would certainly be a must, and maybe you get into that, you know, 11-7 mark. I think they're 18-game conference seasons because, you know, while IU would leave the non-conference without a, you know, quote-unquote bad loss, certainly having lost to two teams in the top 10 right now is nothing bad. They also wouldn't have beaten anybody because, you know, Washington has not played well and probably on the border but probably a little bit below, you know, being a top-half team in the Pac-12. And Notre Dame, while they've been – you know, maybe a little disappointing, is probably a top-half team in the ACC. So wouldn't necessarily be a bad loss, but certainly to be the, you know, top-half ACC team on a neutral floor would be pretty important because then it really puts the pressure on and takes away the margin of error to slip up in a game in the Big Ten and get one of those bad losses, because I think some of these teams that were predicted to be around the bottom of the Big Ten have all proven to be pretty darn good. You know, Minnesota's been better than people thought. Penn State, I think, has played well. Nebraska's, you know, shown quite a bit of improvement. There's really no nights off, you know, save maybe Northwestern in the conference based on who's there. So the conference schedule, no matter who you play in terms of, you know, the teams you play once and all that, I use as a little bit balanced. I think they play, you know, a couple of the quote-unquote worst teams once and a couple of the better teams once, but it really puts a lot of pressure on them to do that, and it's just going to be a grind. So certainly not a reason to write things off by any means if we if don't come away with the win on Saturday, but certainly would be a good one to get because the non-conference resume is not really going to blow anybody away, and while at least they've tried to go out and schedule people, which you know, there's something to be said for that versus a team like Pitt right now is undefeated but haven't played anybody. you know, good in that regard that they've tried to go out and play people. But I think Galen from Crimson Cast wrote something up a couple weeks ago that really spoke to, you know, some of the track records of Big Ten teams in these situations, which is a good read for people if they didn't check it out. It certainly, you know, paints a picture of really limiting that margin for error.
Yeah. Ryan, as you look forward to Saturday's game, will you be rooting more out of a love for Indiana basketball or your hatred for Brian Kelly?
Oh, boy. You know, it's going to be a little column A, a little column B. I know he doesn't have anything to do with the with the basketball team, but, God, every time they miss a shot when I watch them play basketball, all I can picture is Brian Kelly turning purple, screaming at somebody, whether it's his dog or his children, I don't know. But yes, it'll be a combination of both, I think. And when Indiana is victorious, I will be laughing, and I will be imagining laughing at Brian Kelly's stupid fat face.
All right, Andy, one more serious question on that game. You know, as you look at it, is this a game that you're confident in going into Saturday? I mean, do you expect Indiana to win this game?
I think I like a little bit more of what I've seen from IU this year than what I've seen from Notre Dame. So in that regard, I don't know how confident I would be, but I do feel like it's a game that, you know, IU's trending in the right direction for versus, you know, Notre Dame in their last couple games. They beat Delaware at home by 5, and they beat Bryant by 11 at home. So, you know, that was on the heels of, you know, giving up 98 to Iowa when they played their first road game of the season. So, you know, if you kind of look down the ledger of both teams, I'm not sure that either has really beaten anybody all that great, but I do think at least what IU's shown defensively, at least in flashes and certainly at times tonight, albeit against lesser competition, leads me to believe that they can maybe outperform what, you know, their numbers might say on the defensive end versus what I've seen from Notre Dame defensively probably doesn't suggest the same.
Well, as we look to wrap up here tonight, and that game, real quick, is it a 3:15 Eastern start, I believe?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay, so 3:15 Eastern. Do we know what where it's televised?
It looks like it's on ESPN, and I'm not sure if it's the first or the second game of the kind of Crossroads series that they have. So game time could be a little bit off with the Purdue-Butler, I assume, playing either right before or right after. So that might be the reason for the odd, you know, 15-minute after start time, or it could be something else. So something else to watch. I'm not exactly sure about that.
What's your 30-second scouting report on Butler-Purdue? What do you expect in that one?
It's interesting. Purdue's been pretty, I don't know, confounding, I guess, to watch. I actually expected them to, you know, take a step forward this year, and they didn't really seem to do that through, you know, the first handful of games and really struggled in their the preseason tournament they played in. But Boston College, who's also been pretty disappointing, they played them really well in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. So they're a little bit on the rise. Butler, I don't know, has been tested yet, but I think at this point they seem to have kind of the same makeup of the Butler teams of the Brad Stevens era. So probably be a little bit of a grinder, I would guess, and more of a defensive, you know, beat people up type game.
Okay. Well, let's get ready for some final thoughts here. And if I may, I think I might lead us with kind of a leading topic here for final thoughts. I'm sure anybody who's been on Twitter following the IUBB hashtag or maybe who just has their calendar marked for this day every year knows that it is the two-year anniversary of Indiana's victory over Kentucky. Yes, the epic victory over Kentucky that was punctuated by Christian Watford's shot that none of us will ever forget to give Indiana its 73-72 victory. So as we wrap up tonight's victory over Oakland and start to look forward, let's take a quick look back and, you know, feel free, guys, to talk anything that you want about tonight's game. But maybe let's kick off some final thoughts with, you know, whatever your lingering thoughts and feelings are about certainly one of the most memorable moments in Indiana sports history. Ryan, we'll start with you and then go to Andy.
You know, I was in a hotel room watching that in Chicago, and I just remember the feeling that the game was slipping away, and it was sad because they played so well, but hey, you know, at least they competed with such a good team, and we had seen so many times for years in big games Indiana slip away. Obviously, it was a different team, but Indiana just letting it slip away late and competing really hard, but just never –
quite getting over the hump. And Christian Wofford hitting that shot, I remember just being in absolute ecstasy for the next 3 days. Like, it just, and one of my favorite moments related to that shot is about 4 months later, for about a year, they replayed that on the Big Ten Network all the time. They replayed that full game. And I remember sitting at Nick's in an afternoon having lunch, and that game was on the Big Ten Network. And, you know, Nick's was pretty packed in Bloomington that day. And with about 3 minutes left, everybody in the restaurant got kind of quiet and watched the game. And as soon as Wofford hit the shot, this is, again, 4 months later, everybody cheered and went nuts as soon as Wofford hit the shot, just reliving that moment. It was so funny. It was, 1:30 in the afternoon on a Tuesday in Bloomington, and him hitting that shot again. And they've probably all seen it about 100 times, and still it was just so perfect. And, the scene on the court afterwards, I know a lot of people are anti-storming the floor and things like that. But if any, moment warranted it, it was that win against Kentucky. And it was just so great to see, and such a great memory that I'll never forget.
Yep. Andy, let's go to you.
Yeah, I mean, as far as that game goes, I think you tweeted something out about, what you were doing. I actually ended up having to work, had a system conversion not going very well, and kept thinking, all right, I'm going to get out of here in time to watch the game. I'm going to get out of here in time to watch the game. And I did not get out of there in time to watch the game. So I did find a place where I could listen to Don Fisher online. I think it was on my phone, or somehow there was one that wasn't, blacked out. And so I was listening to it, and my wife was texting me. And obviously when you're listening to a game on the radio on your phone, it's a little bit behind the actual action. So she called me to tell me that they had won. And I said, I'm going to hang up so that I can listen to it on the radio so I can hear Don Fisher do it, because I knew it was far enough behind. So hung up right away, kicked back on the radio and got to hear Fisher do it at least semi-live as it was happening. And, that was pretty cool. I think any of us who have, grown up and enjoyed IU basketball over the years have, great Don Fisher moments and calls and just memories of, listening to games with him there. And so at least if I couldn't see it live, I think hearing him call it was, for me, the next best thing. And then, being able to, as soon as I left, I drove straight home, watched all the, the clips online of people reacting to it, read everything I could about it, and just was, just a kind of feeling of pride for the way that, the team had played, and being able to get that win and come back and be, vindicated in some of the things that they had been through. To be able to do that. So definitely a cool memory and a game that I think we've all probably watched more times than we can even count at this point. But always when you see it on, you stop and watch it. Even Durant's play, when you know exactly what's going to happen and exactly how it plays out, still kind of gives you goosebumps every time, though.
Yeah, and it's a game that I think, especially as the years pass and we get further from it, meaning of it might get lost a little bit. It can be easy to forget what led up to that. It wasn't just a win. It was a legitimization of this new era of IU basketball, kind of the re-announcing of Indiana as a player again on the national scale, because my goodness, the years before that were tough, and I think, those of us who watched every single game and went through that, remember that. And it was just such an interesting day, because I just remember reading the reports all day of, the buzz that was in Bloomington. You just hadn't heard about that in so long. We'd beaten Illinois the year before, I think it was, the first top 25 win, and that was great and all. But this was Kentucky, number one Kentucky, coming into Assembly Hall, finally had that, old school Assembly Hall feeling again. And like Ryan said, we played so well, but it was slipping away there at the end. And to come back and make that shot, it was just, it was catharsis, and it was just absolute joy. And I know 1,000 miles away from in my apartment, I just started jumping up and down. I'm giving a high five to my wall. I think that was our eighth or ninth show. Andy, were you on the show that day after the game, or was it just me and Ryan?
I called on the way home, even though I really had not watched any of it, and probably rambled on for 15 minutes with having no actual vision of any part of the game. But I did call. I do remember calling in on my way home. I remember sharing at least somewhat in the jubilation, but I hung up as soon as I got home because I wanted to go in and watch it.
Yeah,
I was not on the show that day. I remember listening back to it and hearing you screaming as you came on the air, but I was not on the show that day.
Holy moly. Yeah, see, I actually went back earlier today and listened to about the first 3 or 4 minutes of it, and it's just me, like, rambling incoherently, and I, for some reason, decided to put the phone up to the TV to hear Crean's post-game comments, and, of course, you couldn't hear them, but, yeah, I don't even, yeah, I barely remember. I mean, that whole, just the whole aftermath of that was such a blur, but it was just, you know, and again, this is not something that anybody, you know, a non-IU fan doesn't get it, and, you know, Kentucky fans can laugh about, you know, how it's, you know, whatever, but, you know, for those of us who witnessed it and for whom it's such a great memory, it always will be. And it's just, it's one of those moments, like, that's why you become a sports fan, is to experience that moment with, you know, kind of a nation of fans like IU fans did. And it was just remarkable. So, you know, let me now, for the final thought, tie that game back in to this year's team, you know, because, you know, in some today, in other respects, it feels like it was so long ago because so many important games have happened between then and now, you know, but you look at that game and, you know, who was there off the bench? The only person who scored a point off the bench that day, that night, was Will Sheehy. And Will, you know, we know about the struggles that he's had over these last four games. I think he's scored 15 points total in four games. Well, that game, you know, the biggest game he had played up until that point, Will scored 10 points. He was 2 of 2 from downtown. He made 2 free throws, plus in terms of rebounds. But, you know, he stepped up and really played well that game, you know, and delivered points that Indiana absolutely had to have. And so, you know, I wonder on a day like today if Will thinks back, you know, to that moment. You know, and obviously he was surrounded by different players. It was a different team, but that was the Will Sheehy that had that swagger, that had that confidence when he came in. You know, he and Victor Oladipo both had it. They might not have been high recruits, but they came in with confidence and a swagger that they were always going to make plays. And that's the one thing, you know, offensively we're not seeing from Will right now. We're seeing it on defense. He really stepped up huge. And again, you know, it's kind of the same message as the last couple shows. I think that's kind of one missing piece for this team that if they can get, is really going to make them tough to beat in the Big Ten season, is to get Will Sheehy back being that confident offensive player that we've seen. Heck, you know, one of the biggest games he's played in, that Kentucky game, you know, in the NCAA tournament, you remember the shot that he hit against VCU. He's a guy who's done so many great things on offense, and so hopefully he can go back, remember those times, kind of get himself back in that mindset, because it'll help this team out a lot, again, especially once the Big Ten season starts and we start playing in some of those tougher venues where he's really the only guy who has multiple experiences there. All right, everybody, another good win for Indiana, 81-54. The Hoosiers are now 7-2 heading into Saturday's must-win against Notre Dame. It is a must-win, you know, because this team needs a good non-conference victory. Saturday represents their chance to do it. Again, the game is at 3:15 Eastern time. We will be here afterwards with another episode of the Assembly Call. And stay tuned on Friday. I'm doing an interview with Chronic Hoosier. We will talk about this year's team so far, probably get his thoughts on Christian Watford's shot 2 years later, and look forward to that Notre Dame game and to what he expects from the Hoosiers for the rest of the season. And make sure you go to assemblycall.com/subscribe. We're planning some really fun content for our email subscribers. So make sure that you are on that list when the content starts flowing. All right, everybody. Have a wonderful night, and we will talk to you on Saturday after Indiana Notre Dame.